You're listening to the FQXI podcast. And now for something a little bit different. Earlier, Vladko Vedral spoke, from the point of view of a theoretical physicist, about the excitement of the quantum physics lab. I don't want to say too much in the introduction of this next piece. I want to just let you sink into it. It's a little bit different from the things that we usually run. The first voice you will hear is that of the narrator, Hayley McGee, reading from a story inspired by conversations with physicist Antoine Essig. The next two voices will be quantum physicists Alexis Jouin and Antoine Marquet at ENS in Lyon, France, describing what it feels like to work on a quantum experiment.
The hiding place and the universe.
We were playing when I was a child in my grandparents' house, and there was a garden. I remember that they started counting for like 30 seconds. I was running super fast and finally ended up behind some tree or whatever. And then you wait patiently hiding, trying to listen to every possible sound. Or I remember that feeling of being hidden.
The universe contains many hiding places. Some places we know well, and others we are yet to dream to the edges of.
Yeah, it's not always super easy to answer when someone asks me, what do you do for a living? And, okay, I'm doing some physics. Which physics? Yeah, quantum physics. And usually that's where people are a bit amazed, because for them it's a sci-fi, like they are going to imagine some sci-fi movies where quantum is thrown every two sentences to explain every behavior you can possibly imagine. It's kind of hard to fight against this this concept that people have through movies and through culture in general, that quantum is kind of okay, that's garbage for everything that is strange and we don't know about. Trying to explain that no, quantum is something which is now very, very well known, which have rules that are quite robust and which survived for 100 years now. Quantum is not something fantastic or illusionary. No, it's real science, like fluid mechanics or astronomy or anything.
You are on the coast at night, walking the sea cliffs before a violent, frothing ocean. The water is too full of waves, like a million tracing paper tides stacked together in the space you see.
What would people see? And if I show one of the chips that we are measuring that will become quantum after we put it in a box and isolate it from the world, they would see a sample that is 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter square, less than a millimeter thick. It's shiny at the surface because there is a metal, and metal reflect light. And if you have really good eyes, you would see also some structures that we've designed on it. And these structures represent region where we want to concentrate some of the movement of electrons, or where we want collectively to force electrons to move in a certain way that will, at the end, be quantized, so be quantum.
When you put all of the efforts to put all the universe aside and be really completely isolated, then you can see quantum and quantum effect arise. And not before that, because you would have a vanishing of the information of the quantum superposition otherwise. And for me, you also have this kind of thing, which is, for me, the whole difficulty of our field, which is you want something which is super isolated because you want it to be quantum and everything. But at the same time, if something is completely isolated, you just don't care about it because you are never going to see it and never going to be able to do anything about it. So you want something super isolated, but at the same time, you want to have a very, very small channel through which you can try to interact with it.
There is a path between high rocks. It leads you down, out of the sound of the wind and surf, toward a hidden beach. As you descend, the sea twists in and out of view. Each time it reappears, it seems stiller, as if becalming itself to your approach.
So what's the most important is to understand that we are trying to protect our quantum states from any noise. In a very general term, noise can be anything that changes with time in a random way. So the first thing we do is we put what we call a Faraday cage. So it's just a big piece of metal. And you should make it as perfectly closed as possible. It should be completely, perfectly closed. Now, of course, if you completely close it, you can't extract anything out of it, so you have to open at some point. And through this hole, you're going to put what we call a coaxial cable that we use to propagate the signals that we want to use to probe the quantum state. And now we're going to start to enter in the fridge. So follow me. There's this tube, and we go down the tube. You have to imagine a fridge is a bit like Russian dolls. It's a lot of shields. We call them shields, but it's exactly the Faraday cage that I described earlier. Except it's smaller and smaller, of course. And each of these are different temperatures. The first shield I talked about is at roughly 20 degrees Celsius. I mean, room temperature, the temperature that we know. And then each shield will be at a lower temperature, and we keep going down, and each time we meet a new shield, we have a new little connection to ensure that we are cooling down this tube at the same temperature. And we keep going down, and we keep going down, and we reach the 20 millikelvin plate, and that's the lowest temperature, the minimum temperature of the fridge, which is minus 273, roughly, degrees Celsius. We could even claim that these points in these fridges are the coldest points in the universe, because even the universe is way hotter than that. And now it's not over. We have to keep isolating. So we will put things that will absorb every possible energy. And we have different types, so we call them filters. So you have to imagine already the mess of waves in the lab. Most of them didn't get into the tube. But if some of them managed to get in the tube, they have been attenuated at each stage. And now, even after that, if they remain still, they will be filtered. Now, finally, we enter in the final box. And in this box is sitting the sample that I've described, the 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. So, of course, it's connected to the outside via all this complicated arrangement of shields and filters that I've described. But there is still a way to bring some information down to the qubit, and or to the quantum state or to the chip. And vice versa, the quantum system can respond and send something back.
You reach the beach. The sea is now a pane of glass. Flat, unmoving. From here, you see a ship shimmering in the cold silver of the moon. You step into the icy water, still looking at the ship.
The outside world doesn't really see what we are doing and kind of sees us in a black box. The general public only sees very few great new discoveries, which are usually going to be published by big companies such as IBM or Google, because they are the ones doing the most publicity and not the academic labs. So they don't really see what we are doing in a day-to-day basis. And I'm not even sure that's something that you really want, because you don't want them to be able to understand everything you do. That's not possible, of course. But it might be nice to try to communicate a bit more about what the life of a physicist is. For instance, my friends who are not physicists, when they first asked me, what do you do? And I told them I was doing a PhD in quantum physics. I know that they had basically no idea what the life of a researcher has.
You raise a hand to cup your lip.
Hello?
Your voice echoes out across the bay.
Hello?
Tense and potent silence. And then, was there reply across the frozen night? Or was it your yearning heartbeat singing in your ears? In either case, you smile.
There is a special feeling that you only get when you do research. That's close to the joy probably you get as a child when you win at a super long game. It's when your experiment finally gives something that's new, that's interesting. This happens only like once in a year maximum. So all the rest of the year, you're patiently waiting for that moment where it would finally do something interesting. I think that's the reason why I keep being so passionate about physics. It's this intense joy that you feel when one thing is working. Because it's a result of so many little efforts of you. If we wanted to, it's a bit you trying to play with the elements around you, and at some point they do something you expected or you did not expect, but at least something that seems to make sense. This feeling is comparable to the joy I was getting when I was a child, hiding, but you know, just compressed into one little instant.
That audio experience was created by Pronk Productions, featuring Alexis Jouin and Antoine Marquet. The narration was written by Jack Monahan and read by Hayley McGee, and the original music was composed by Robert Moutry. And if that's whetted your appetite to learn more about the research being carried out by Jouin and Marquet, you can read more about the goals of their experiment, which actually seeks to use quantum measurements as fuel to power mini motors, in a Q&A with one of the team leaders, Alexia Ofev, linked to on the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast, by reporter Miriam Frankel. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that experimental piece from Pronk Productions. I think now I'll go and ask them to imagine the experience of a tardigrade being quantum entangled. But for now, that's all we have time for in this edition. So thank you again to Vladko Vedral, Mitch Waldrop, Alexis Jouin, Antoine Marquet, Hayley McGee, Jack Monahan and Robert Moutry. If you have thoughts about quantum tardigrades, Hubble trouble, space telescopes, or the life of quantum physicists, you can let us know on Twitter at FQXI, on Facebook where we are FQXI Physics, or by email at podcast@fqxi.org. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and elsewhere, because you really don't want to miss our countdown of the biggest physics stories of 2021 released next week. And until next week, everyone at FQXI wishes you a very merry JWST launch day. I've been Zia Morali.